Three men have been sentenced in connection with the abduction and torture of Kevin Lunny. Joining me now is courts correspondent Frank Graney. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon, Ciara.
So these three men are going to be sentenced for a total of 70 years for the abduction and torture of the director of Quinn Industrial Holdings. Before we get into that, Frank, just remind our listeners exactly what happened on the 17th of September back in 2019.
Well, on that evening, Kevin Lunny had finished work at Quinn Industrial Holdings. He was a director there. He made the short drive home to his home in County Fermanagh. And when he got there, he stopped at the end of the laneway leading up to his house. There was a car blocking his way. He couldn't go any further. So he stopped the car, and as soon as he did, this car that was in front of him, a BMW, reversed its speed and smashed into him. He gave evidence himself, Mr. Lunny, during the trial. He said the two masked men came out, dragged him out of his car. We heard there was a struggle. He initially locked himself into the car. The two men managed to make their way into the car. Another car then pulled up, an Audi pulled up just behind Mr. Lunny's vehicle. He was dragged out of his car. He was forced into the boot of this Audi at knife point. He was then taken, we heard, to a yard in County Cavan. He was forced inside a horse box. He was asked if he knew why he'd been taken there. He said no. He was told it was because of his role at Quinn Industrial Holdings. He was repeatedly told he had to resign. He was told the other directors at Quinn Industrial Holdings had to step down too. His attackers then told him that they'd have to rough him up, and we heard harrowing details during the trial of the violence that was visited upon Mr. Lunny. We heard that he was stripped to his boxer shorts. He was doused in bleach, punched. He was attacked with a knife. We heard the letters QIH were carved into his chest, I suppose, as a reminder of why he'd been taken there, and a reminder, if he needed it, of what they expected him to do after he was released. And he was released. He was dumped on the side of a quiet country road. And thankfully, some passers-by did see him and raised the alarm.
It was absolutely shocking story, obviously, when everybody did hear about it. And these three men today were sentenced. They were already found guilty of the abduction and torture of Mr. Lunny. There's one man, Frank, who has received a 30-year sentence, but he cannot be named.
That's right. This man has been referred to in our media coverage as YZ. We can't name him by court order. There's nothing untoward about the order that was put in place. I can't go into any great detail as to why it was put in place, but I know some people online are suggesting that it's something to do with some sort of a cover-up. I can assure you that that's not the case. And when we are in a position to identify this YZ, we certainly will. But in the interests of justice right now, we can't. And as you said, Ciara, he has been handed the longest sentence out of the three at 30 years. So he was convicted of false imprisonment and assault causing serious harm to Mr. Lunny. False imprisonment can carry a maximum penalty of life imprisonment on conviction. Now, the judges didn't quite go that far, but 30 years is a huge sentence for him to be handed down.
And Kevin, Frank, just in regards to that, there's lots of people who get sentenced for murder, etc., and don't receive 30 years.
The average sentence that a convicted murderer spends behind bars is about 20 years. So I think that does certainly put things into perspective. Now, you know, people will argue that there are some convicted murderers that will spend an awful lot longer in prison. And indeed, you know, a license will hang over their head long after they have left prison. But 30 years is a remarkable sentence. You know, you take remission into that, he's unlikely to spend a full 30 years behind bars, but it's still a huge sentence. And I suppose it just goes to show the gravity to which, you know, the judges weighed in on the violence that was visited upon Mr. Lunny and the motive behind it. This was simply because they, or perhaps others behind the scenes, wanted Mr. Lunny and his fellow directors to step down from their roles at Quinn Industrial Holdings. YZ was found to have played a lead role in what happened to Mr. Lunny. He was described by the court today as the ringleader. We heard that he did a dry run with another member of the gang the day before. He had also been part of a surveillance operation on Mr. Lunny's family in the lead up to the abduction. He was found to have business and personal links with a man called Cyril McGuinness. Cyril McGuinness, Gardaí believed, was the one pulling the strings from afar. We heard that he has since passed away. In relation to YZ, there was an electronic toll tag that linked him to the car that was used to transport Kevin Lunny to the yard in Cavan, that Audi car. It's believed he was the driver. The court was also satisfied that he dished out most of Mr. Lunny's beating. He was the one who branded him with the knife. The judges, in relation to that, the judges remarked that the scarring was intended to permanently injure him in what they described as an exceptionally specific way. No doubt, again, a reminder of why they kidnapped him and what they wanted him to do to avoid any more trouble.
Now, just in regards to the convicted criminal Cyril McGuinness that you just mentioned, the it was found that the attack was coordinated by him. He went on the run, it says here, but he died of a heart attack on the day police over in the UK raided his house and found him in November 2019, obviously just 2 months after the torture and abduction of Mr. Lunny. There was two other men, Frank, that were sentenced today, one to 25 years and the other to 15.
That's right. The man who was handed a 25-year prison sentence is a 40-year-old man from East Wall in Dublin. His name is Alan O'Brien. He also played a significant part in what happened. He went on that dry run with YZ the day before. He was also found to be the driver of the BMW that rammed into Mr. Lunny's car outside his home. He helped drag him out of the car. He also, we heard, assaulted Mr. Lunny, and he was the one who held on to him in the boot of the Audi as he was being transported to that yard in County Cavan. And that was after Mr. Lunny had tried to get out of the car while it was moving. We heard dramatic evidence from Mr. Lunny himself that he managed to get the boot open. The car was travelling too fast. He was contemplating whether or not he'd jump out, and his attackers then saw what he was doing, stopped the car. He was assaulted and he was put back into the boot. And Alan O'Brien was the one who held on to him then for the remainder of that journey. We heard that he was also forensics aware. And after that struggle with Mr. Lunny, he identified the need for bleach to remove any traces of forensic evidence, and we heard that bleach was procured and brought to that horse box in County Cavan, and Mr. Lunny was forced to douse that all over him again to remove any sort of forensic evidence. The third man then is a 27-year-old man, also from the East Wall area in Dublin 3. He's called Darren Redmond. He was jailed for 15 years for his role. He was said to have assisted in a lesser capacity. The judges acknowledged that neither of the other two accept the verdict of the court, the non-jury court. This is three judges that heard the evidence over the course of 12 weeks. No jury, obviously, before the Special Criminal Court. Unlike the other two, we heard that Darren Redmond doesn't have any sort of a criminal record. There was also, I suppose, in mitigation, his relative young age. He's 27 years of age. That was also taken into account when they constructed a sentence for him. It was initially, or it was set, at 18 years imprisonment, but the final 3 years of that sentence have been suspended, so he was jailed essentially for 15 years today.
Now, Frank, you just mentioned YZ there a few moments ago. Do you expect YZ to be identified in the coming days?
It's hard to say whether or not it'll be in the coming days, okay. But what I can say is that there will reach a point, and it will be very obvious then once we've reached that point as to why we haven't been able to identify YZ. Okay. It is in the interest of justice at the moment, but that won't stand forever. That court order will at some point be lifted, and as soon as it is, we will of course be in a position then to identify YZ.
Okay. Well, we appreciate it very much. Thank you, Frank Graney, courts correspondent there in regards to the three men who have been sentenced to a total of 70 years for the abduction and torture of Kevin Lunny. Thank you, Frank. Now, Fiona O'Loughlin joins me on the line, Fianna Fáil Senator for Kildare, of course. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly is set to lift the ban on gay and bisexual men donating blood. Good afternoon, Fiona. I believe you should be there now.
Yeah, all good. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. So Fiona, just give us a bit of a background to this potential lifting of the ban on gay and bisexual men. Why is it in place in the first place?
Absolutely happy to give you the background. This was something that I came across probably last year, and I realised that there was a complete discrimination against gay and bisexual men in terms of donating blood, and we all know how important donating blood is and how crucial it is to have supplies of blood for those that need it because of accidents, because of hemorrhages, because of a number of different things. And in fact, there was a big shout out last week to say that because of COVID, because of illnesses and because of Storm Barra, that there was a real shortage of blood supplies and that there was an urgent appeal out, which really only brings to home to any of us, you know, when there is a situation where people who want to donate blood can't. And this is one of those situations. So basically, up till 2017, there was a lifetime ban on gay men donating blood. And in 2017, that changed to a 12-month deferral period. And that basically meant that gay men could donate blood if they did not have sexual relations with any other man during the previous 12 months. Now, in the same year, in 2017, the UK changed to a 3-month deferral period, which basically meant that any man who had one sexual partner in the previous 3 months could give blood. And in June of last year, Northern Ireland brought their legislation into line with the UK. So basically you have a situation where gay men could not effectively donate blood, but they could donate, go over to England and donate blood there. And one young man that I met, Tomás Heenahan, very, very passionate advocate for equality and a very passionate advocate for people donating blood, actually has gone over a number of times over to London in order to donate blood.
Yeah, and just to note, because you noted this yourself, that the Irish Blood Transfusion Service, it imported a huge consignment of blood from the UK. That was for the first time since the 1990s. And you mentioned the fact that obviously some of that blood will have been donated by gay and bisexual men.
Exactly, and that was my key point to make next, just in terms of having given you the background. There's a huge hypocrisy there, where we have a situation where we're saying that gay men cannot donate blood here, but that we're happy to accept blood from gay men in the UK, or indeed there could be Irish gay men who have gone over to donate blood, such as Tomás. So it was really a ridiculous situation. A person's sexual orientation should not be a factor in their ability to give blood.
So and what's changing, Fiona? What will Minister Donnelly put in place?
Okay, so basically, I've been calling, probably for the last year, I've been calling on government colleagues, and particularly Minister Stephen Donnelly, to expedite the establishment of a review board, because that was important to put that in place, with a view to adopting an individual risk assessment in terms of blood donation for gay and bisexual men. And obviously, you know, hugely, hugely crucial. So that was put in place, which was really, really important in terms of trying to progress this further. And I understand that this group have now made recommendations to Minister Donnelly. He's going to make an announcement tomorrow in relation to two key changes. I don't have all the detail at this point in time, but from what I understand, there's going to be a two-phase announcement, and basically I think we will be possibly going to a three-month deferral period.
So a similar situation to what's in place in the UK currently?
Yes. What I'm not sure is whether it will be a three-month straight deferral, so that gay men, you know, cannot, if they have had any sexual relations over the last 3 months, donate blood, or whether it's going to be if they have had the same sexual partner for 3 months. So that's the detail I'm not sure about. But at the same time, I really believe it's going to be an important announcement. And I think, you know, for us as a country that celebrates equality, that legalised same-sex marriage in 2015, it's really important that these restrictions are changed against our own citizens. And of course, you know, for those who have come to make Ireland their home, we need to treat all citizens equally, and we need to be very, very consistent in our own messaging. If it's safe for a gay man in the UK to donate blood to Irish citizens, then it's safe for an Irish man to donate in Ireland also.
Okay, well, Fiona, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. And of course, we will keep our eyes and ears peeled for any updates from Minister Donnelly. That is Fiona O'Loughlin, Fianna Fáil Senator. And of course, we hope you have a lovely Christmas, Fiona.
And you too, Ciara.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Fiona. Just in regards to the donation clinic, Fiona was mentioning the Irish Blood Transfusion Services, which we've had on our news over the past couple of weeks. They were in quite dire straits in terms of blood bank, that the type of blood that was there. I know O negative, A negative, and is it B negative were the bloods they were looking for in particular? They were very low on. So just to let people know, there are donation clinics happening across the Christmas period on the 28th of December, which is a Tuesday, at Monree Community Centre. That's on Magdalens Avenue in Naas. There will be an appointment. Now, just to remind people, it's an appointment basis clinic only, so you need to book. So that's from 12 p.m. to a quarter past four on the 28th. It's also 12 to a quarter past four on the 29th, which is the Wednesday, and it's 12 till a quarter past four on the Thursday, which is the 30th. So you can call the number 1800 731137 to book an appointment. And they will also have a clinic running in Kildare Town. That's at the Educate Together National School. That's on the Melita Road in Kildare Town. And again, it's an appointment-based clinic. In terms of Kildare Town's clinic, you can call 1800 222 111. That's to schedule an appointment. So on Wednesday the 29th, they're open from 3:45 to 8 p.m. and the same for the 30th, which is the Thursday, 3:45 to 8 p.m. So if anybody out there wants to donate, do so and check out the IBTS website, which is giveblood.ie. Now, as we know, from today, an 8 p.m. closing time does take effect for pubs, restaurants, cinemas and theatres. There's going to be 50% capacity at large events, and wedding receptions are capped at 100 guests from today. But joining me to discuss this, because I'm sure a lot of couples will be very upset about this, is wedding expert from the Irish wedding blog, Zara Kennedy. Good afternoon to you, Zara.
Hi, Ciara. How are you doing?
I'm good. I do have to say, I genuinely feel for couples because it's gone down to 100 guests. So am I correct in saying, literally, Zara, some people are going to be calling people up to go, you know, you were 105. Sorry, you're not going to make it this time.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's it. Now, look, it's, you know, we do live in a world where we've been dealing with a lot of fluctuation over the last 2.5 years. And to one extent, this is par for the course. But there was that sense that things were kind of getting a little bit of normality, and then in comes Omicron. So I think what my advice to couples so far has been that there are a lot of guests sitting at home that are on the fence about going to your wedding anyway. So rather than going out with a shot and getting rid of a load of people, your best bet is to actually go out first and foremost to actually say, is there anybody that at this point feels that they're not, that they don't want to attend, in whatever wording you want to put that in. And because you might be able to get quite a solid drop off from that point, because what's happening is that people are committing to going and then letting, like, basically saying to the couple a few days, a few hours out, saying, look, we're kind of feeling uneasy. Different story if you've tested positive because you've done your antigen test, or you're going in to get your PCR and you get a result that's, you know, unforeseen, whatever. But if you know at this point that you're not really keen on being in that setting, then you should let the couple know, because it just makes their life that little bit easier. But guests across the board, look, they understand. They know that, look, this is completely out of control for the couple. There's only so much a couple can do on this. They're, you know, they have to work with the cards they've been dealt. So, so work with your couples, you know, if you can, you know.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. And I think that helps couples, isn't it, to kind of reiterate the fact that by and large, the majority of people in your life are going to completely understand the situation. But one of the things I don't think has been focused on over the past few hours, well, past few days since we've known about these restrictions, is the actual venues themselves. So if I'm a bride or groom and I've booked, you know, 250 guests, 200 guests, whatever it is, and now I'm only going to have 100 guests, does that mean that the venue is going to be repaying me for that extra 100, you know, plates of food that I have paid for, thinking I'd have the original wedding in my mind before Omicron reared its ugly head?
Yeah, so it all depends on whatever contract you've got in place with that specific venue. Now, majority of venues would work with the couples anyway, so because they're dab hands at this stage. So when they're left in a position whereby, you know, there's been something that's been mandated down from government for public safety, and couples are left with no choice but to abide by that. And venues, they just adapt the contract accordingly. It's different where you've got the likes of an exclusive venue, where a lot of the pricing is wrapped up in opening the doors and venue hire. So sometimes the venues will meet them somewhere halfway. The difficulty we have coming into this week is that majority of hoteliers, chefs, venues will have bought that food for those numbers for the week ahead, and it's coming into the busiest period as you roll into the lead up to Christmas. So, and particularly for that following week out, a lot of you know, hoteliers would have put their orders in for the week between Christmas and New Year's, right, which is like prime wedding week. They would have done that already. So now it's, well, what do they do, you know? And that's what the dilemma they're facing now is, because A, that's an overhead they're probably not going to be able to recoup, and second of all, it's a lot of waste.
Yeah, and what are the couple saying to you, like, over the past few days and this morning in particular? Like, how are they coping with it? Because in fairness, any wedding, especially when it's a big wedding, a lot of time and prep goes into it. So you can understand, some people may look at it and go, ah, look, it's a pandemic, these things are happening. But you can understand and be compassionate to those people who are so upset. They spend so much of their life and so much of their time over the past few months looking forward to this day.
well, even worse, you've got couples who have pushed out 3-4 times get to this stage.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and so they, you know, they thought this was the home run. Now, to be fair, I honestly thought that when I heard what was being announced for indoor hospitality in general, I was like, oh God, that's going to happen now for weddings. So I think in one respect, if I look at it from a high level and look at how it has been in the past, 100 guests is good, albeit that it's turbulent for a lot of couples. But you can't help but empathise with them, because that wedding has been in planning for a long time, and 4 days notice is not enough, or a week's notice is just not enough when you're trying to plan a wedding. Like, it's such an upheaval. So my heart really goes out to them, because they're now in a really difficult position, because it's such an emotional thing for a couple anyway. So you've so much, it's not like it's a spreadsheet and you can just look at numbers and cut them. It's such an emotional buy for them. So I really, really do feel for them. And coming into Christmas as well, it's just, you know, such a dampener for them.
So Sarah, those who have, obviously a huge amount of weddings do take place over Christmas, but those who have booked their weddings and have pushed them forward, would say, from other times of the year, and are going to hopefully hold them in February or March or April of this year, what advice would you have for them at the moment? Nothing is concrete. We don't know what's happening. So those brides and grooms, I'm sure, are probably under a little bit more stress in some aspects, because they're looking ahead to the next couple of months thinking, what could possibly happen?
Yeah, I do feel for the ones that are February, March, because they'd be thinking about invitations going out at this point and they don't know what to do. So, look, I think that the key thing is that I'm looking at it. This time last year was an absolute free-for-all, right? So we all got to go and kick our heels up for Christmas, and it went bananas. And we paid for it for months after. There is a slowdown now in socialising, and there's, with those restrictions coming in a little bit earlier, and plus supported by what the Taoiseach was saying earlier, that there isn't an appetite or there isn't any kind of plan to lock down further once we get to January. So in one respect, I'm confident that we're not going to end up in a lockdown situation whereby everything's shut down. What I know as much as you in terms of what the restrictions are going to be, because none of us know what they're going to be. And I think we have to get through January, get to the end of January, to really get an idea of where we're at. So my response would be for couples who are that kind of February onwards, my feeling is, having looked at it last year, we're in a better place going into 2022 than we were going into 2021, because we really had to pay for Christmas for like 3 months after it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have a bit more confidence going into it this year, but also I would be saying, around invitations, wait until the final hour to send your invitations, just in case, because you don't want to assume, oh well, we'll definitely for February have a free cap on numbers, when we just don't know. It's just so close to the January deadline day. So so take your time with it. And even at that, I was saying to one bride this morning, like, you could go, if you're February, if you're that close to it, or even March, for comfort, you could go out with 100 and then play it by ear and then release the next wave of it when there's a little bit more confidence, all going well. So there are ways and means to do it. But some are very laid back and they're saying, look, I'm just going to send out, I have 150 on my list, I'm getting married in March, I'm sending it out anyway, and I'll deal with whatever's thrown at the time. And that's also a great attitude to have. Okay. Just go with it.
Well, Zara, I like your positivity there. We hopefully will be in a much better place at the end of 2021 and going into 2022 than we were at the end of 2020. And, you know, those 3-4 months were really difficult for people with the full lockdown in place. So I'm going to take that positivity, Zara. I need it. I think we all do. Thank you so much. That is Zara Kennedy of The Wedding Blog. Take care.
Christmas music with candlewarehouse.ie, the home of Yankee Candle. Also home to Ashley and Burwood fragrance lamps that clean and fragrance the air. At Tokers on the Newbridge Road and at candlewarehouse.ie.
That is, of course, The Pogues and Kirsty MacColl with Fairy Tale of New York. Now, people from Kildare were not expected to be the biggest spenders this Christmas. It's people from counties Cork, Dublin, Tipperary and Limerick. Men continue with the time-honoured tradition of leaving their shopping until the last minute. This is new consumer research by AIB. And this Thursday, which is the 23rd, is expected to be the busiest shopping day of the festive season. Of the late shoppers, many will choose to shop local this year. And it's believed consumers will spend over 7 million euro an hour on Thursday as they rush to get the last minute gifts. I feel like you spend more when you're getting the last minute gifts. It's just I hear about these people who are last minute gifters and it stresses me out. It actually stresses me out. I don't know why you do it to yourself. It's expected to be particularly busy between 12 p.m. and 1 p.m. on Thursday. Caoimhe Hearney is saying that this is her, and it is her, and it stresses me out. I need people to be organised. Why do they do this? So throughout the rest of December, women do outspend men by 23%, and their busiest shopping period is between the 19th and the 23rd. And in terms of men leaving, you know, the Christmas shopping till the last minute, the new data reveals that men typically outspend women by 8% on Christmas Eve. This is the only day in the month of December when men will spend more than women. That's because men are probably, by and large, the majority of people who are shopping on Christmas Eve. How can people do it? I don't know. It's quite interesting data going through it. But hopefully you have got all your Christmas shopping done. Do get in touch with us this afternoon. The text and WhatsApp line is 0833 97 97 97. Senator Fiona O'Loughlin was on the show a little earlier discussing Health Minister Stephen Donnelly set to lift the ban on gay and bisexual men donating blood. We are supposed to hear more tomorrow, so we will get some more information on that hopefully, and I'll be able to bring it to you. But Mag texted in on WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97 saying she lived in the UK in the 90s and for that reason she can't give blood in Ireland. And I know there's a few people like that, Mag, unfortunately. And then I don't have the texter's name on this, but they said, "Hi Ciara, a typical man here going shopping on Thursday and still have no idea what I'm getting anyone." I can't even read this out. It stresses me. Not in the least bit stressed about it either. I'm actually, that stresses me so much that the other day a friend of mine said, oh, somebody asked her for something in particular, for a Christmas present for somebody in her life, and they said this is what they'd want, and she goes, oh, they're all sold out. And I was stressed by it. I was like, oh my God, they're all sold out. So I went out of my way to make sure that she could get it, and I went and bought it for her and gave it to her because it was stressing me out. So that's how much I'll go that people have their Christmas shopping organised. I don't know why I get stressed about it. I just do. I like being organised. But it's good to see that you're not in the least bit stressed about it either. Caoimhe Hearney tells me I need help. I think I do. We've got another text in on our WhatsApp line saying, "Happy Christmas to all at KFM. Thank you so much." This is from Mary. Thank you, Mary. "There are hundreds of thousands of us doing our best in the last 2 years to be safe and healthy. Why should good people have to suffer again?" She says, "Going to meet up with family or friends for a meal or drink. Someone told me two women went to the UK recently and one of them tested positive for COVID-19. She was not allowed on the plane and she came home by boat. That means she's infected her family, and are they not checking at Dublin port?" Mary, I'll do a little bit more research on that. I actually could not give you the details for that, but I haven't heard that. That's quite shocking. Mary saying somebody tested positive over in the UK, wasn't allowed on the plane, so came home by boat. Now, Tim Ho Community Council just put up this on their Facebook a little earlier on. Their tractor run has been cancelled. They say, "Unfortunately, we have made the difficult decision to cancel this year's run due to the rising COVID-19 cases. We hope to run it as soon as is possible in the new year." And they say, "Wishing you all a Merry Christmas and a Healthy New Year." That's Timahoe Community Council's tractor run. Unfortunately, it has been cancelled. Now, Anna Cullen, the multimedia specialist with AA Ireland, joins me now. Anna, how are you? Anna, can you hear me? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. We are looking for tips and advice, though. This is obviously to avoid making burglary easy this Christmas. A lot of it happens all year round, but this time of year, it's kind of at its peak, isn't it? And people are going out shopping, out and about, and usually they leave the bags, etc., in the car. And unfortunately, it's just too easy for burglars to get in and grab the stuff.
Yeah, as you said, Ciara, a lot of people will be out and, you know, they will be leaving their cars unoccupied with their gifts in it possibly, or, you know, when they're going to do their shopping. As well as that, they'll also be leaving their houses unoccupied. And unfortunately, each year our home insurance team does come across cases of homes being broken into and gifts being stolen as well. And, you know, you do want to enjoy Christmas, but we're here, I suppose, to just give you some tips on how to make it as safe as possible. So, I mean, if you are, let's take your car, for example, if you are going out shopping and you are leaving your car unoccupied, it is important to protect your gifts while they're stored in the car. So, and we do understand that it may not always be possible to avoid leaving your car unoccupied, but there are still things that you can do to reduce your risk. You know, if it's possible, park in a secure car park. and also get into the habit. Now, this is all year round. This doesn't have to be strictly the festive season, but get into the habit of physically checking that the car has locked away, has locked before you walk away from it. I know that I'm a bit of a devil when it comes to,
I'm,
you know,
your
just walking
sister
away
there.
From the car.
I do, yeah, it all the time. Yeah.
You know, just walking away and then 5 minutes later, you're wondering, did you lock it? Did you not lock it? And then it's
or
too
where's
late,
your keys?
You know? Exactly. You know, so little things like that, just get into the habit of checking. And when it comes to your home as well, if you are going to be leaving it for a long period of time, just make sure that, you know, potential entry points are locked and secure, and you hide your presence carefully as well. And, you know, our home insurance team has given us a list of tips on how to protect your home. So you could use a burglar alarm, you know, check all external locks before you leave your house, and also leave a light on when your home is unattended to give the appearance that someone is at home. And we also give the advice of thinking of the Christmas angel. So A, make sure that your alarm is functioning and turn it on before you leave. N is tell a neighbour if you're leaving for a long period. That's a really good option there. G is glass, so check that all your windows are closed and locked before you leave. E is for exit, so make sure all your external doors are locked as well. And L, as I said, leave some lights on that it looks like someone is at home.
Okay, perfect. Well, Anna Cullen, the multimedia specialist with AIA Ireland, thank you so much for giving us advice there, tips and advice to avoid making burglaries easy this Christmas, and obviously keeping ourselves safe. And we hope you have a very safe and happy Christmas, Anna. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.